Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Thursday, which means it's time for TF3 on a Thursday. With no Adam Boltwood, he's quit the club at the end of the season, and so we're looking at other options. His tactics just weren't working anymore. It was a little too conventional, and people had begun to work it out. Dave O'Brien, welcome back.
Well, you know, replace Adam, you've got to get a Maverick in, haven't you?
Yep, you got to get a Maverick with a good sidekick. Someone who plays pressing, attacking podcasting. But also stays. I don't know where I'm going with this. Chris, welcome
in the
back.
Box.
Good. Hey. It's good to have you both on the show today as we go through the Q's and the A's, but also some of the news that's out there. This weekend, obviously, we're going to preview a little bit of the football to come. And as Chelsea don't play till Monday, it's a good weekend for false hope in the Premier League as people get within 7 or 8 points of the top. Two teams who are never going to make it within 7 or 8 points of the top this season are Liverpool and Arsenal, or Arsenal-Liverpool. Chris, they're the 5:30 kickoff, and at this point, both managers are under pressure.
Do you think Klopp maybe more than Wenger in my eyes, but then that's only because I think that the toing and froing with Wenger means he's under less pressure. It's not that he's in a lesser or a greater position. Excuse me.
It also seems a little bit weird though, doesn't it? Because it's almost as if, well, with Wenger, if he just says, well, okay, well, I'll go, then that just relieves all the pressure.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. They're in massively different places on their timeline. So, like, to use a metaphor, I think I'm using the right word there. Arsenal is more like a long-term marriage, whereas I would say Liverpool is like the very early stage of a relationship. You know how sometimes they say after 2 years, you know if a relationship's got long-term potential or not.
Yeah, and you just begin to let James Milner bomb on.
It's that same kind of thing in terms of this is the first full season under him. And so a lot of the supposed frailties that were attributed to the fact he came in after the start of the season shouldn't necessarily be there. But then also, and this is personally my opinion, I still think, and I think I said it to you earlier in the week, that squad still needs shaping into his preferred vision. I don't think there are a number of players that fit into his ethos or his approach, and I think until that refinement takes place, you probably won't see the best you can of Liverpool.
You're saying as a woman, you're still trying to shape your man.
That's perhaps where the metaphor falls down ever so slightly. But
Roberto Firmino is the special dates. James Milner is, you know, just coffee.
I just think that
what's Emre Can?
Well, not very good after last night or Monday's game.
Wow!
I think
what did you do with him last night?
but no, I think when you look at it, there's an interesting debate to be had about patience, or whether actually it's a lack of pragmatism on Klopp's end. Because I think you could form a strong case to be said that he does need to get rid of some of the Rodgers players and players that just don't fit what he wants to do and don't have a future. But then also you could say, how pragmatic is he in terms of developing other styles? Because I would argue the man that's currently top of the table right now was able to assess his team, accept that the formation he had didn't work, and then change. And I think if we look at just the teams that are finding a little bit of success this season, it tends to be the ones that are quite pragmatic in their approach and are willing to change and throw out what they have written down in favour of something new.
Dave, in his first few seasons at Dortmund, it's also fair to say that Klopp didn't light the world alight there either, though, did he?
No, I'd say he did in terms of the vigour and what he brought to the club. I think there was definitely something positive going on there.
On the table, he's in a very similar shape to what he was at Dortmund.
Yeah, but I think there was a bit more promise than at this Liverpool side in terms of bringing young players through, bringing exciting talent through. And again, it was Dortmund were a club that needed that. Dortmund were a club right then that had been through the bankruptcy. They'd been through near being insolvent and so forth. And I felt that they needed a hero. They needed a saviour in a way. And Liverpool did need a saviour. It's like that Liverpool expect a saviour in a way.
Do you feel a little bit like... and I'm a little bit worried about this, that Liverpool have almost assumed... So it's almost as if, and this is another metaphor for Liverpool, they've taken up the gym membership, but now they're not going to the gym.
Yeah, they've expected this instant success. They've expected to come out with a six-pack after half a session or, two weeks of doing the programme.
Yeah, they've seen Mike Chang on six-pack shortcuts.
And yeah, exactly. Yeah,
exactly.
Whereas what they need to do is they need to go down and hit the iron hard, not just work on one part of their body. They need to work on a full body workout. They need to do their legs, their arms, their biceps, their triceps. They need to do everything. Yeah, and Liverpool have a weak core, and you're right there. Their core is too easy to penetrate. And that's unfortunately what Liverpool needs to do is readjust that central penetration. That six pack is not even there underneath the belly fat.
Okay. I think we've taken that metaphor far enough. Having said that, though, Dave, in the big games, Liverpool have tactically been able to exploit a lot of the big sides. And it's fair to say that Arsenal in recent years, and based on previous fixtures, not always enjoyed playing Liverpool, under Klopp at least.
Well, yeah, I think it's that Klopp has worked out how to beat bigger teams. I don't think anyone argues with that. I think Klopp's intensity in these bigger games and how he sets up his teams is very good. I think it's the other way around, that they struggle in these smaller games. Statistically, that's completely proven. And I think you saw the game at the start of the season, Arsenal versus Liverpool. It was a crazy game, but it was a very Jurgen Klopp-esque game, trading punches and so forth. And it kind of evolved that. And, the recent game against Manchester City, Liverpool were a lot better tactically, disciplined. They the shape was very good. 10 men behind the ball in sort of a 4-2-4 shape, but it was a defensive 4-2-4 in their own half. So it looked very, very good. And that's what he does against these bigger teams, is he presses them at the right time, but also they're very compact and they use the pace to get in behind, which troubles a lot of these bigger teams. The problem with that approach doesn't work against beating teams like West Bromwich Albion that are going to defend their penalty area. You can't sit back against them because they won't allow that. They're sitting back. I think that's the problem, that he's got the answer against these larger teams. He's got the weapons against these larger teams. But what Liverpool potentially lack is a goal scorer. You think of Sadio Mane, who is the player that's scored their most goals in the Premier League this season, been directly involved. We scored 20% of Liverpool's goals. But if you compare that to the big dogs in the Premier League, like the top six, that is, it's quite a poor margin in a way. If you think of Zlatan at Manchester United, he scored around 39% of United's goals, obviously carrying the team there. But then you've got other ones with, for example, Harry Kane at Spurs, who's rocking in, he scored around 35% of Spurs' goals, Sanchez 31%, Costa 29%, and Aguero down at 21% at City. City have struggled for goals recently, Liverpool are struggling for that goal scorer, and I think without, Daniel Sturridge isn't that guy, and they've got to address that in the summer. Klopp has to address that. It's fair enough saying the board make these decisions, the sporting director makes these decisions. He now knows this squad. He knows that it's weak at centre-back, he knows that it's weak at potentially at left-back, weak at defensive midfield, and weak up front. And he needs to address those four issues. And it's now his team. There's no more excuses for Jurgen Klopp in this next transfer window. It's his call. Yeah. He didn't buy anyone in January because he was like, I'm happy with the squad. That was a bit foolish.
I'm not
sure.
I think you're misquoting him there. I don't think Klopp said he was happy with the squad. I think he said that the deals that he wanted to do weren't falling into place, and therefore he wasn't going to go for those deals. And so I think that's different to being happy with the squad. I think it's very clear that Jurgen Klopp isn't happy with this squad. I mean, you can see that from the front line that he's playing. The problem being, Dave, that even though he's not happy with the squad, you can't fall back into what Liverpool did last season, which is to say, okay, we'll give you this time to work on your tactics, all those kind of things, and work it out, and we'll write off the rest of this season. There has to be some progress made. So finishing in the top four is the minimum they'd expect. And the problem being that Liverpool, on Monday night, did not do that against Leicester, and they made some very basic tactical mistakes, which you'd argue shouldn't be made, whether Klopp's happy with the squad or not.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's the thing. It's the crazy thing. The two big results Leicester City have got this season have come against two of the, in open brackets, you know, best coaches in the league that have been a bit naive against Leicester. Leicester won the Premier League sitting deep, counter-attacking, using the space in behind with Jamie Vardy, with Riyad Mahrez breaking with the ball at his feet. Liverpool and City both have done that this season and been absolutely thumped by Leicester. And again, it was a bit the same thing over and over again. Why didn't Klopp even think about trying a back three? You know, consider nullifying Jamie Vardy. That's Leicester City done this season.
I think because they didn't have anyone that could play in that back three. They had two central defenders. It would have been, I mean, a back three would have consisted of
You could have chucked Klein there. You could have thrown
Lucas
through the middle. I just think there potentially could have been a better way. You know what Leicester City strengths are, and I don't think Liverpool did anything
Think that's part of it, though, Dave, is actually there's no need to play a back three against Leicester, because Liverpool, you would assume that Joel Matip and Lucas could deal with an out-of-form Vardy. The problem was that Liverpool came up against them in what essentially looked like a slightly shifted, if not doing very similar to what they were good at, squad.
Yeah, I think it's... it is one of these things where... Leicester, the stats, you know, they ran 10 kilometres more than Liverpool, more than they have in a single game this season, the whole squad combined, the whole team on the starting 11 and the substitutes and whatever. But it's a real weird one. You kind of know what Leicester City can do. I think that's the thing. It's assessing what could happen, given that their manager's just been sacked. Their manager's just left. The players are going to be motivated. It seemed like Liverpool did come into the game tactically naive, but also maybe motivational and sort of, you know, looking behind the scenes of what actually is going to fire these players up. They were a bit naive there as well in terms of their analysis of psychologically where these Leicester City's players are going to be. They want to prove something. They want to show that the boss didn't win the Premier League for us last season. It was us, the players, and our player power has got him out, and we're going to be better now. And again, it's that crazy situation Liverpool have become undone against a team that they should have been beating.
Yeah, I'm not a massive fan of throwing the boss or the players under the bus. I think there was some sort of a combination of the two, and the Tinker Man, as he was known, maybe there were elements of that which let both sides down. Anyway, Liverpool find themselves in this position. They find themselves on the brink of not really being involved in the top four chat anymore. But Chris, in this game, it's fair to say they're playing an Arsenal side that don't have much to play in the Champions League after. So really, Arsenal can put all into this.
Yeah, they can. That's the thing. I think they've got the FA Cup still as well. So their priorities, you would argue, are very apparent. Because, again, I think even the most optimistic Arsenal fan isn't going to expect a turnaround with that game, because Bayern Munich are just too good and the deficit is just too great. So I'm also a firm believer that really you should focus on the next game regardless, even if you have, you know, a decent chance to go past Bayern Munich if you're still in the title race. I think the second you start looking forward to games in the calendar is when you give yourself more trouble, because you're not focusing on what's ahead of you, and that breeds complacency as a consequence. And I also think it puts more pressure on the game that you've singled out, because again, you've accepted that, you know, well, the game before was a loss because this is the one we really care about. And in general, it's a funny time for Arsenal because I think their future is so uncertain. Whereas you could look at Liverpool for a contrast and say, yes, their future is clear because it involves Klopp, it involves continuing to build that process, that team. Whereas Arsenal, I can't really tell. There's no strong leaning towards the fact that Wenger's going to go or Wenger's going to stay. Who will come in if he does go and what that brings with it? Because that's, you know, that's, again, to use that relationship analogy, it would be them breaking up with their first love and the person that they've been with for most of their life. So
George Graham.
It's that idea of, you know, what comes after that. It's going to be very different. Whatever comes and then whenever it comes, it's just now deciding exactly whether it's going to be this summer or it's going to be delayed for a few more years.
Depends if you. I mean, there's so many jokes. Anyway. But you know what? Both clubs are actually in fairly rude health, even though Liverpool reported somewhat of a loss. I say somewhat, an actual loss financially based on spending on some players and also some other spending, obviously, on stand and et cetera. It is fascinating how people try and put it down, almost try to blame the players who were bought for their price tag. But it is what it is. Those two clubs play 5:30 on Saturday, UK time at least. There are some other fascinating ties in the Premier League this weekend, guys. West Brom play Palace. It's Pulis City, Chris.
Yeah, that's going to be an interesting one. Mark Hughes.
Wait, West Brom Palace. Come on.
Oh, West Brom Palace, sorry. Yeah. It seems as if Allardyce's methods are slowly working, and yet in the shadow of that win was the fact that Andros Townsend and Christian Benteke had a pretty nasty-looking argument on the pitch afterwards because Townsend didn't pass to him. And
Benteke
there
did
are
that
reports,
at Liverpool as well, you know.
Well, this is the thing. There are reports that Benteke is not exactly delighted at Palace at the minute, and that Palace are somewhat mutual with that feeling, and they'd be willing to sell him if the opportunity arose. So it's a curious situation because they've invested heavily, I think, not just in Benteke, but in a lot of players. You look at Schlupp, Townsend, Kabay. It's a lot of money invested in a lot of different ways. And the truth is, it just hasn't come to pass for them. They didn't have the dramatic upturn I think they expected. And for me, it points to the fact that it's a lot more difficult to do what, say, a Southampton or an Everton have gone and done, which is consistently build and move up the table as you do it and sustain yourself in the top. You look at Pulis for a contrast. He's done that, but it's taken him a few years. And I can't imagine any of us were saying this time last year, I think Pulis will have a decent run next year. I think we'll get into the top 10, the top 8, whatever. So it's a very complex machine, that one. And I'm sure there's not a worse time for Pulis to come and face them now, given the history with the payoff and everything that is circulating with that. So I don't know if they'd take Pulis back, honestly, because I do think this is very much the perfect storm for him this season. I don't think this is what he does consistently. But I also think that they're a little bit more nervous with Sam Allardyce than maybe they thought they'd be when they got him.
Point. Dave, Leicester Hull. Can Leicester continue this? Or do you think they're going to come up against a slightly savvier side than that Liverpool setup?
Yeah, and they'll come up against a slightly savvier side that is capable of playing a back three that could negate the front two of Leicester City. So it's going to be interesting. Marco Silva's done a fantastic job, and he's got some interesting players in. Obviously, he's made a load of signings in January. It's going to take a bit of time for those to get on board, but they look like they are getting on board. And I think this whole team has a lot more, you know, has some different components that Leicester might not like to play, you know, physical centre-backs. I've been impressed with Harry Maguire recently, actually. He played very well against Manchester United, and then since that game, he's sort of gone on a bit of a run where he was good against Liverpool.
He's
starting to turn into a good defender, you know, what being from Sheffield United for a while and never, like, took that step up. And finally, at Hull, it looks like he's finally being the defender that everyone's seen him being. And I've been very impressed by him. So him versus Jamie Vardy is going to be a great battle. I quite like him bringing the ball out. When he's playing in a back three, he's quite good on the ball. He's good at carrying it over distance. I think he nearly scored against United from bringing it out. He nearly scored against Chelsea from bringing the ball out of centre-back. So, yeah, it's an interesting proposition there. But with Nias up front, you never know what you're going to get. Could be good, could be bad. You just, sometimes he hits the back of the net, sometimes he hits Rose Ed. So it's going to be an interesting game. But Leicester, Danny Drinkwater was very good, and Didi, that looks like a good combination, a little bit different than the Conte Drinkwater, where they were both a bit interchangeable. One would go, one would sit. This is more of Drinkwater holding and Didi pressing a little bit higher. So that's got some potential as well. So there's a lot of potential for this Leicester team, but it is whether it was just this one thing or boss has gone now, let's perform.
Yeah, very good point. Obviously, Chris, later on in the weekend, it's Tottenham, Everton. That's exciting.
Yeah, because I think Coleman was talked about as a potential Spurs boss at one point, was he not?
Yeah, and he's also being talked about as a potential boss for someone else very soon as well.
Mm. he's a curious fellow. Because
he loves Twitter.
I was going to say, I found it quite interesting that he essentially was quite open in saying, you know, I don't want Southampton to win because that means that we could potentially nab a Europa League spot. He was very honest. I can't fault his honesty in that sense. If it did lack somewhat in diplomacy,
he's very Dutch.
Yeah, it does seem as if he's gone through his own little mini transformation this season, just because there was a period where I don't think Everton fans were too enamoured with him. And I think now they're slowly starting to see what he's doing. I think, for me, the thing I enjoy most watching Everton at the minute is watching Tom Davies, because I think, for me, Everton have always been a fairly decent production line in terms of young players. But I've never been quite sure how consistent that has been in terms of them staying with the team and actually reaching the potential that was projected for them. Guys like Jack Radwell, to a lesser extent Ross Barkley, I don't think have hit the heights that have been projected for them. Now, in fairness, I would caveat that with some of that is media hype, and I think some of that has done them a disservice, and maybe it wasn't Everton fans talking about them as England staples and all this kind of stuff. But in Davies, I think they've got someone that actually can achieve what is set out for him, because I think he's got so many of the mental intangibles that you can't always see unless you watch them across a game and just watch them and no one else. But also, he's technically very good, and I think that's what Everton need to be doing. Yes, it's great to buy Schneiderlin, and I think he's been a massive improvement for them. He gives them, alongside Garner Gate, a fantastic defensive shield. The pair of them are just so suited to work around each other. I think Schneiderlin's got a little bit more craft and guile than Gay, but Gay covers the ground in a fantastic way. But I also think that they need the complement of young players alongside that. And then you look at Lukaku up top as well. I think this is a good situation for him to be in right now with Everton. I think he's at a good club. And so it's hard to really find a negative with Everton right now, if I'm honest.
It is very tricky to find negatives in Everton. One of the negatives may be that if Lukaku and maybe the manager leave, then they might be in a tricky situation.
Yeah, and I mean, look, Blassie's injured as well. That doesn't look too great for them, considering he was a sizable investment. Which, again, I'm sure Spurs can relate to, because they've had to go out and try and buy that kind of player. And I think that's where Spurs need to refine themselves a little bit now, is in the recruitment process, because they've had some massive successes. Christian Eriksen for, what was it, 10, 12 million, is now looking an absolute steal. Vertonghen, Alderweireld, you could say Wanyama as well, very good. But I think when they come to buy those big money players, if you will, the Sissokos, to a lesser extent Lamella, because he's picked himself up under Poch, they just need a little bit more refinement. Because I think at the minute, they're investing big sums, but I don't think those players are taking them to the level they should be. Lamella has in spades, but obviously he's injured at the minute, which is not great. But again, without wishing to scapegoat the guy, Sissoko is to me, everything about that said panic buy, and it's interesting that these two clubs were both in for him, because I think they both had money to spend but didn't really know what they wanted to spend it on. And in the end, I think they both convinced themselves that he gave them what they wanted. I mean, Poch talked about wanting a guy they could run in behind. But really, if you watch Sissoko, and I've said this before, I've never seen him really do that, running behind a fullback and collect a through ball. He's very much wants it into feet, stands them up, runs past them. So, yeah, I've talked to Flav about on the Fighting Cock about, you know, he really wants Dybala and things like that. I do just think they need to be shopping, not for Dybala specifically,
Dybala.
but I mean when he was at Palermo, I think that's where Tottenham need to be. They need to be in that market of a guy that could genuinely be a star. They need that sort of Bale type character, I think. Someone that they can maybe just add an extra 10% to take him into the world-class bracket.
Dave, let's go to Manchester. Not literally, though that would be terrible. Sunderland, real Manchester, Dave. Sunderland are at home to Man City this weekend. Let's go to Sunderland. David Moyes has already said we've got 12 games left and we're playing Man City next. So I'm not going to put too much hope on that one.
Well, it's classic David Moyes, but you mean North Manchester, Lawrence McKenna, not actual Manchester, North Manchester. That's where Manchester City are from, North Manchester.
As opposed to United, who are in Trafford, which is Trafford.
South Manchester, Lawrence.
You mean south of Manchester?
No, South Manchester, Lawrence.
Right, okay.
You need to get your bearings right, mate. You don't want you going to the wrong postcode in Manchester. Someone might stab you.
Believe me,
but
Dave,
in terms of,
there are enough people in Manchester already want to stab me, no matter the postcode.
This is true.
Good morning, Stephen Harrison.
But anyway, yeah, City versus Sunderland, not really going to be a classic. It was such a scrappy game at the start of the season. That was when Guardiola was messing about with inverted fullbacks, but he didn't have Philip Lahm anymore. He had Bakary Sagner and Zabaleta. Didn't really pay off. City were really good against Huddersfield, played at that higher tempo again. Aguero looked fresh. Scored two goals, got an assist, but it was his work rate and his determination. I think in Sterling, they've got a player that's going underrated this season. I think he's definitely back up to the levels of Raheem Sterling at Liverpool. He's starting to play some really good football and again was pivotal in the victory against Huddersfield. So I expect City.
I think he's above them, to be honest.
Potentially, yeah. It's a good point. You could say that he is ahead of where he was at Liverpool.
Individually, yes.
So it's interesting, and obviously with Sané in there as well, if they're starting to look come a good against City again, and I expect them to be maybe second in the Premier League. So this is the start. This is the turning point. This Lawrence, right now,
very enjoyable prediction there, Dave. Man City find themselves, yes, that's right, 11 points off the top going into this game. Sunderland, if they do manage to get through this game, which I imagine David Moyes hopes they do, Sunderland then play Burnley, Watford, Leicester. Those are the three games, essentially, that they need to get some points out of. They then play... put it this way, they've got some very winnable games between now and the end of the season, but they also play Manchester United, Arsenal, and obviously Man City and Chelsea. Their final day of the season is against Chelsea. Dave, I'm going to stick with you in South Manchester, where Jose welcomes Bournemouth. Also, judging by your geography, somewhere in South Manchester.
Somewhere in South Manchester, Lawrence, yes. Bournemouth. Old Trafford.
Ah.
Back off, mate. Going to be a good one.
You got the first silverware of the season. You think they're going to show it off around Manchester's biggest social attraction?
Yeah, I think so. I think so. They're going to get the trophy out. You know, in fact, what was it? It's like their 42nd major honour or something, eclipsing a club in Merseyside's record. But anyway, Lawrence, we'll move
Central
on to the
Liverpool,
football.
Dave.
No, Merseyside, I'd have to say. Football-wise, yeah. Zlatan Ibrahimovic is the main man for United, obviously, this season. Scored 33% of United's goals in all competitions. Been directly involved in 50% of United's goals in the Premier League. 15 goals and 4 assists. And has scored more goals for Manchester United than Mata, Martial, Rooney and Marcus Rashford combined.
Wow.
And in terms of what he did against Bournemouth earlier on in the season, he showed his side to the game that many British punters hadn't known or didn't know. That was him driving through midfield and cracking a low shot into the bottom corner of the goal. United were dominant that game, and I expect them fully to blow this Bournemouth side away.
All right, fair enough.
I'm going to go with it, Lawrence.
Dave,
do
you think Bournemouth are in trouble?
I've tipped them early doors to struggle, you know, with the dodgy similar players. Losing Nathan Ake has been a bigger loss than expected because he was brilliant for Bournemouth first half of the season. So Jack Wilshere is out injured again, I do believe. So there is a lack of creation in that centre of the park and too many sideways passes in that midfield. So there will be a bit of an issue for Bournemouth against Manchester United.
Interesting. What about Wayne Rooney, Dave? There have been poll after poll on Twitter of where he's going. Where would you like him to go? Home?
Maybe to North Manchester.
Everton.
Yeah, Everton. Everton. That'd be a good one for him. You know, it's time for, at the end of the season, it's definitely time for Rooney to move on, to go. Until that point, he'll be a valuable member of the squad, playing at number 10 or whatever. I hope Mkhitaryan's back for Manchester United, but Rooney could be a good substitute if he's not.
Well, the words coming out of North Manchester, and we can't really avoid it much longer, are the kind words for Luis Enrique, who announced that he will be leaving come the end of the season at Barcelona. Pressure's been created by the media in many ways, Chris, though you'd also say that it's been created by Barcelona because their own structure seems to have let them down now. And for some reason, Luis Enrique is being used as the fall guy in this one.
It's a political club in the same way that Real Madrid is. I actually was hanging out with friend of the show, David Cartledge, on Monday. We went to go and watch the Spurs youth game that I was talking about in the last episode. And he's based in Barcelona. And he did say on Monday, I expect him to leave at the end of the season because I think he's just tired. And that's the thing. Barcelona, for all of its prestige and perceived allure, is a very draining job, both physically and mentally. And I think for Enrique, someone who was often the bridge between players and management, I think he just got being tired of being the diplomat. And, you know, you look at what he achieved in terms of the treble and then the double. I think there's only a handful of managers that have done that, followed up a treble with a double the next season. So his record stands for itself in that respect. I think what they do next is going to be very interesting because, again, that's where the politics come into it in terms of selecting the successor. I know Miguel Delaney's wrote a story today that says that Jorge Sampaoli is likely to be ruled out for that political reason, that Bartomeu essentially wants a former player to come in again. And I can understand that from the respects of you want to further that idea that Barcelona is more than a club, that it's a production line of more than just players, if you will. It's managers, it's coaches, it's being part of the family. And look, to digress very briefly, I think that's why Mourinho has such a problem with Guardiola, is because he worked at Barcelona, but he wasn't reared on their education. So he didn't fit in the same way that the likes of Koeman and people like that did. And I think you look at the managers it's produced, Barcelona, be it largely former players and stuff like that, it's a good calibre of people. I just think they need, to use that word pragmatism, I think they need to be a little bit smart with things. And I think they need to pick a coach that's going to help keep them at the elite level and winning trophies.
Dave, your pick?
I think the Sampaoli would be perfect for the job in terms of what he's done at Sevilla, his fluidity, his pressing style. That's what Barca massively they missed this season, their aggression in the press and their ability to win the...
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Fall back. So definitely number one. He's number one by a country mile. If they don't get him, they're stupid. What he's done in the league so far has been fantastic. Other options, they could obviously go to Germany and pick up Thomas Tuchel. He'd fit perfectly. But then why would you want to leave Dortmund with the young players they've got there and how he's progressed them this season? But in terms of the system and what changing the style of football up to a 3-4-3 away from the 4-3-3 would be perfect. You think of the players they've got, that it kind of makes sense. MSN would still be intact. In terms of their central midfield, you go someone like Iniesta, Busquets. Potentially, the right back issue is still a slot, is still a problem. I think with any manager that comes in, their first job is to get a decent right back, or the sporting director get a decent right back. Because whoever you think of, you're going to bring in, you think of a Yardim maybe. Completely go away from where Barca have been recently with the football, the possession, and so forth, and the possession counter hybrid that Enrique had, going to pure counter attack. You still need a right back. The system doesn't work. The 4-4-2 wouldn't work at Barcelona without that right fullback. Of course, Jordi Alba on the other side is perfect, left-back wise. Could play in a three or whatever, but it's an interesting one. I think Thomas Tuchel would fit perfectly.
I mean, some of the criticisms of Enrique I find very unusual. People talking about him not being able to bring youth through, or sort of criticism of him. I kind of feel like he's been put in this position where he has to play certain squads, certain players, right?
I think so, yeah. It's kind of the weird one with Barcelona is that they, you know, even though you say you've got to bring all these young players through, potentially, because you've had so many good players in the recent memory, you know, the best two central midfielders in world football, or the best three central midfielders in world football, should we say, for the last 10 years, Busquets, Xavi and Iniesta, you're not going to consistently produce players like that. You just can't do that. What you need to do is potentially bring the ones in that have a slight, you know, have the potential or could fit into certain positions in the side, you know, especially at right fullback. Getting someone from the Barcelona academy may have been a better thing than signing someone like Alex Vidal. Alex Vidal was fantastic at Sevilla, playing right midfield, playing right back, but it was a different type of football. It was a counter-attacking football. So again, it's fitting the cogs to the, you know, fitting the cogs in. Obviously, Sergio Roberto has played at right fullback for this Barcelona team, but you know, is a central midfielder. He's played absolutely everywhere, and maybe fullback is a little bit too much of a specialised position for him to play and to excel at. You know, such as Dani Alves has done in recent years. So it's players like that that you should fill in by your academy, and then you can get the likes of MSN, buy them in. You could potentially sign a central midfielder every now and again, a centre back. But yeah, I can't criticise him too much for the youth side of it. I don't think he's been too bad there. It's just the generation isn't as powerful as the previous generation of youth players. You know, Meunier, hot and cold. You think of the other strikers that they've sort of brought through. I can't think of the guys like Tello, for example. Not great in the last few seasons, their development there. So, yeah, it's a mixture of two, I think, not producing the talent, but not having the right keys to put into his machine.
I mean, Chris,
Sergi Xampa as well. He's on loan at Granada. He hasn't looked like he's, you know, the calibre of midfielder. And I mean, even closer home, Andre Gomes has not been good since he came from Valencia. Honestly, I thought he would do better than he has. I quite enjoyed him with Valencia, but he's been nothing short of a disaster. So again, it's that thing of, it's very difficult in this moment because you're looking at it alongside his achievements and you're struggling to find a flaw because of everything that he did. But as it stands right now, I don't know realistically what more he could have done. Like, you can't make youth players better.
You can't make youth players better. You do somewhat get that he must be left with somewhat of a bad taste in his mouth, that he will feel a little let down by the structure there.
Yeah, of course. I mean, look, that's part of it as well, is that the youth academy, La Masia, all this, you can Google it. There's 1,000 articles telling you how great an academy that is. And yet, speaking to people like David, it seems like actually it's dropped off a little bit of like the standard there. And that is being borne out by the fact that, again, and I'm not singling him out. He is an example based on the fact that I've seen a good amount of his performances this season. Sergi Xampa goes to Granada and doesn't hit the height. If he was good enough for Barcelona right now, he'd be playing in the same way that Xavi and Iniesta, they kept those guys around the squad because they knew the potential was there. That I think, when you send someone like Xampa out on loan or Meunier, you're doing it in the hope that game time elevates their level. It's not that you know there's something there that will blossom in time. You're hoping that the rigors of first team football will spark something and will ignite something and cause something to grow.
Yeah, like a great example of that is Denis Suarez when he went to Villarreal and you know, completely set the world alight there, playing on the left midfield of a 4-4-2. But again, it was a counter-attacking 4-4-2. It's different space to operate in. It's easier to play on the break than play in a possession-based style when you're a winger, when you've got to make things happen. Because instead of breaking into space, breaking into yards and yards of space and being able to use your pace to just go around players, you're playing against deep defensive blocks. And that is harder to unlock. It's a different skill to unlock. And I think someone like Denis Suarez coming back to Barca, we've seen some games where he's been absolutely awesome, but we've seen other games where he's been anonymous. So it's that thing that, yeah, these players potentially just aren't at the standard that they should be at Barcelona.
Some of these people are so just under the ire. And the bottom line is also that you can't always 100% win everything when everyone else is being very good too. They do seem slightly out of step tactically with everyone else, which is what makes me wonder which direction they're going to take the club. I don't know, a few years ago, people were sort of lauding them for all the good they were doing. It almost seems as if they've almost overstretched that a little bit and they didn't plan for the future in the way you'd like them to.
It's weird, like you know, we do mention it like that, but the signings that they have signed have been young, like Suarez, like Gomez, but they just haven't made it. And it's one of these weird things. But again, yeah, the policy of signing young players seems like the right thing to do. But when there's nobody on the market to sign these young players, you can't do that just because you've got to do that, right? These players have got to fit into the team. Signings like Ivan Rakitic made this Luis Enrique team, players that were at the top of their game, then just flip reversing and then going to sign talented youngsters or perceived to be talented youngsters. Kind of like, do you see what I mean? It's like a really mixed transfer policy. One season they're doing this, next season. But then I think that goes with being a Barcelona manager and then what the presidents do and how much control the presidents have.
Yeah, I mean, he's also apparently one of the best coaches. I mean, Pep Guardiola praised him as one of the best coaches out there. So I'm sort of wondering whether it's, it seems not similar to what happened with Rafa Benitez, but as if certain expectations around him win out over other expectations. Whether he suffers for that is an interesting one. Should we move on elsewhere? Should we take some questions, guys? Or is there anything else you think around Europe that we need to be discussing today?
Little nod to Feyenoord. They look like they're on course to win the Eredivisie. They managed to get a big win against PSV. Goal line technology played a part, actually, in giving them a 2-1 win over PSV. And it's ended PSV's hopes. So I think that's the first time since 2009 that there won't be a medal going to one of the De Jong brothers. One of them has collected a medal in either season, in every season since 2009. But now they're both on the PSV squad. That chain will be broken. But yeah, it's a great achievement, even to just get this far for Giovanni Van Bronckhorst, because they haven't had money Feyenoord. It's been all willing and dealing and trying to be smart.
And who's that between the sticks, Chris?
Brad Jones. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Brad Jones collected an award for his goalkeeping. Seems a man reborn. And actually talked about the atmosphere on Sunday. And I don't think it was a dig. I think he just is very enamoured with his club when he said that the De Kuip, I hope I'm saying that correctly, the atmosphere there was better than Anfield, in his opinion. Like, it was the best atmosphere he'd ever had. I assume he was asked, kind of, you've played at Liverpool, was that the best? And he said, yeah, it was better than Anfield, if I'm honest.
Where's your famous atmosphere?
Maybe when he's saying it's the best atmosphere I've played in, he means I sat on the fucking bench for ages at Liverpool, so I didn't actually play. although, obviously the dig can also go to Liverpool, who seem to let go of goalkeepers and then they go on to the next stratosphere of goalkeeping. You could also say the same about, wait, who was I reading about? Obviously Pepe Reina went on. Pepe Reina is arguably, that's the police coming for Chris. Pepe Reina is now arguably a better goalkeeper than either Mignolet or Karius, and will probably also suit because he can pass the ball. Jones has left, and then there's one more who's doing well elsewhere, which is, let me look him up.
Jerzy Dudek.
No, it is Gulashi, who is now.
Was he at Liverpool?
He was, Davey.
At Leipzig?
Yeah.
he's been well good this year.
Yeah, exactly.
Saved Penno 2 weeks ago.
Yeah. So all of those goalkeepers have gone on to find better things, arguably, than either sitting on the bench or being abused. Although Pepe Reina was obviously never abused at Liverpool and had a fantastic relationship with the cop. Anyway, all those goalkeepers gone on to better things. Thank you. Should we do some questions, gents?
Yes.
Right. Getting into it straight away. Just got to get the mentions up instead of all the favourites and hearts we've got. Your player of the season so far from the bottom half of the table? Either of you? It's not a bad question, is it?
Good. Harry Maguire. I quite like him. I think he's undergone quite a decent change under Marco Silva. I think Tom Carroll at Swansea's been quite handy when I've seen him.
Llorente at Swansea?
Yes, I think he's finally found a system that...
The Gilf.
Is...
Sigurdsson, man. Come on. Unbelievable. Beneficial.
Yeah, Sigurdsson's another good shout.
Who are we going for from Burnley?
The team. Sean Dyche. Best player.
Sean Dyche's tones.
You've also got Middlesbrough there, so Adama Traore, I think, has something. It's just an end product thing with him. If he could just sort that out, he wouldn't be anywhere near.
He has something special.
He does. I mean, he can go past people like nobody's business. He can never underrate that skill.
It is somewhat of a weird one, isn't it? Because actually, when you look, when I'm looking at the bottom half of the table, I also find Watford in 12th place. Arguably, you could say someone like maybe Aurelio Gomez. Screw me. You're right.
He's letting a few whoppers.
Didn't he
at Leicester? Yeah. I know he's coming mid-season, but I do like him. It's so difficult because he's coming in after Kante, and everyone is going to say, "Oh, well, what is he? How does he match up?" I think he's a very different player first and foremost.
I also think
that he's a very good player though, and. Look, we don't know what happens with Leicester this season. They look like they're in a decent spot now in 15th. I do think if they survive and he stays, I think he blossoms next season.
Gabby Adini, anyway, who scored a hat-trick last weekend, Dave. How good is Roberto Firmino really? Says Daniel.
Whoa, Lawrence, man. You can't just throw these things in, right? And then not let me defend my Man United agenda.
You shouldn't sit on mute then, should you, you little bitch? How good is Roberto Firmino really?
I was actually on mute for a reason there. Swag too much.
Just steaming behind. Would you have him at your club? What is his best position? I don't really know as an LFC fan. That's a question from Daniel Pagram. Anyone out there? I mean, I love him. I think he's great just off the front striker.
He's an interesting forward. He, you know, played some of his best stuff at Hoffenheim, playing on like the left-hand side, right-hand side, exactly, playing a bit deeper in midfield.
I think he's left off the striker with someone like Coutinho.
I think if you play, a top team, you play him as a false nine. If you play a weaker side, you play him as an attacking midfielder. But I think Liverpool lack that number nine to play ahead of him to get the best out of Firmino.
Interesting stuff. I also just, some of his touches are fantastic. He's great for a highlight reel.
On a final point as well, Firmino for me is an elite counter attacker. And one of the issues that Liverpool have had in 2017 is that they haven't been able to break on teams. Teams have been breaking on them.
True. Very true. Thanks, Leicester. Create the perfect man using EPL manager characteristics, e.g., personality traits. Klopp. Klopp's smile, Dyche's voice, Pulis's wit, etc. What would you guys take?
Wasn't going to take Pulis's legal team, was it?
I'm going to go down the table. I'm going to ask you to create the perfect man based on these things. Chelsea manager Antonio Conte. His passion.
Conte's passion.
Yeah. Pochettino's
hair.
Tactical nous.
The perfect man, Dave, not the perfect football manager.
Orange, being tactical isn't just in football. It's every single form of life. For example, you know, if he wanted to go to a restaurant, does he use the tactic of him being part of Pochettino, part of Conte, part of Tony Pulis to get himself a table, Lawrence?
I understand.
Got to think,
Dave.
Outside the box.
Yeah, right.
Anyway, Poch's hair.
Poch's hair. Pep Guardiola's.
Languages.
Eyes. Oh, yeah, good, languages. Awesome. Dave, now, if you're going to pretend that I had a go at Mario Götze, then I'm going to pretend that you're having a go at bald people.
Lawrence, I don't know what you're talking about, but I said his hair. Like, you know, take Pep Guardiola's style, bang it on.
Okay, Dave. Arsenal.
Arsenal's diplomacy.
Good. And also his I didn't see it characteristic.
Vision.
Yes.
Does Claudio Ranieri get in on a technicality because he's been managing in the Premier League? Because I think his humility and dignity is has to be in there.
You're right. Dignity is one thing. Liverpool and Klopp. I don't think his smile is one of those things. I think Klopp's
energy.
Maybe fashion sense.
I would have said Pep for fashion sense. I quite like. He always looks quite sharp.
You are a cardigan man, aren't you?
A little bit of knitwear. There's a lot of sins.
Manchester United and Jose Mourinho.
Smouldering?
His
anger.
Dave, we're trying to build their lovely human being. Oh, sorry, his way with the women. Ronald Koeman, honesty, for his blatant honesty.
Yeah.
Surely. West Brom, Pulis. What do we want from this man?
His laugh.
His laugh is a good one. I'm also
his baseball cap.
Yeah, his baseball cap.
So I mean, he's got diversity when he's going out with the boys.
Diversity, sure. I still feel like we've done Pulis done him dirty there. Maybe his defensive nature. Bilic.
Crazy attitude.
No, this person is bipolar, the person that we're building right now.
we are building an absolute nutter.
Oh, I love his passion. We're just going to build someone who no one ever invites to a dinner party.
He's the strong, silent, passionate type.
He's the strong, silent, passionate, outgoing type. Ah, he's a Libra. I'm going to say his allure. A lot of players seem to want to go and play for him at times. Maybe his ability to move on. Stoke City, Mark Hughes, his handshake.
Yes.
Burnley, Sean Dyche, his voice for sure, right?
Mm-hmm.
Who's next on the table? Watford, Matt Zari.
His
language skills.
Ability. Dave, language skills. At some point, we've got a man with multiple language skills. Way too much passion.
Going to be a great man.
Maybe his ability to adapt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's it, his adaptability.
Yeah. Claude Puel. His ability to just seamlessly... Pragmatism. Yeah, good. Eddie Howe.
Tracksuits.
Oh, his sure. face. I was his gonna, face. He's, yeah, got, he's got a cheeky face.
I was going to say his cheeky little face. He's got a cheeky little face. Craig Shakespeare. His ability to make people their best.
He's a good writer, wasn't he, Craig Shakespeare?
He manages... drop it, Dave. Who manages Swansea? Paul Clement. His ability to complement the better aspects of the people around him.
Yes.
I thought Karanka.
Passion is there.
Maybe his ability to... criticise those around him and still remain in the environment?
Yes. Yeah. His ability to find the flaws in others, because that's what you need in a relationship.
Nothing like finding the painful flaws of another person and pointing them out so
directly.
Some of
my best relationships were when they found the flaws in me really early on.
Yeah, short but sweet. This one's a good one. Sam Allardyce. Negotiation skills. Travelling ability.
His openness?
Relationships with journalists. Marco Silva. Just looking foreign.
Feel like he's got a very big cologne collection, and yeah. I don't know why.
Yeah, you're right. David Moyes. His ability to be dour and yet still stick around.
His chronic realism.
Maybe his waistcoat. I don't know. That one. This human is terrible. Here we go. We built what
David
I
David Moyes wouldn't so much propose as say, I want to spend the days I've got left with you.
That's so true. I want to die with dignity. Will you be the one to inject me? Seems like there's a good question here from Matt Brownie Cakes. By the way, let us know which characteristics of managers in the Premier League you like. If each of the top six clubs were a genre of music, which would each club be, e.g. grime, classical, heavy metal, etc.? So let's go down the top six. Dave, Chelsea.
I'd say that would be like metal music.
Yeah,
a bit passionate, a bit fiery, and get up for it.
Do you not think metal is a little bit hard to appreciate at times?
Similar to Conte's football, sometimes it's defensive, sometimes they've got to wait for the right moment, and some people don't like that style, Lawrence.
So you're saying it's metal, not heavy metal?
Yeah, just normal metal, just not heavy metal.
Yeah, so
normal
sort of metal. Aluminum.
Yeah.
Spurs. Chris?
Spurs
is a tricky one, isn't it? Could you go for sort of a UK grime scene?
What's Pendulum? Remember them? Whatever Pendulum is.
I feel like they're a little bit more nuanced than that, aren't they? There's a little bit more class behind them. Maybe they're a sort of a... Maybe a Spurs sort of Daft Punk.
Yeah, possibly.
Because they're behind the scenes, there's a lot of detail, but what comes out is, you know... But then Daft Punk topped the table, whereas Spurs... City.
Justice.
What, the same song over and over and over again?
That's the one who did Dance, didn't it?
Yeah, the same song over and over and over again.
Yeah.
Arsenal. I want to say like a sort of a guitar music.
Edith Piaf.
I do imagine Wenger sometimes singing Edith Piaf after a game.
I could just picture that as he's sort of led away by, you know, when DT take over. No, you know, regret I am.
He sort of signals to Pat Rice to put it on. And Pat Rice just plays it on the boombox, and all the players sort of go, oh no, he's coming in again. And he sails in. No.
He finally. That's what he's got on his iPod as he just takes them out one by one.
No, you're not right. Anyway, Liverpool, heavy metal. United, Dave. What are United?
Something like. Something that's good. This, you know, got to the top of the charts, but everybody else hates it now. Yeah, something like that, like Steps. Serial winners. Serial quality, but just like hated.
A sort of now that's what I call music kind of vibe.
Yeah, yeah.
Sure.
Like maybe what was Eiffel 95, were they called?
Eiffel 65.
Oh, it's Jose Mourinho.
Do you think maybe they're a bit Justin Bieber? Because it's kind of they have a raging success and people dislike that in a way. And it's also very easy to dislike some of the shit that they put out.
Hmm.
Where will Wayne Rooney be next season? Galazzo, Gonzalo Galazzo asked that one. Dave, we kind of answered that one already.
Somewhere else that's not Manchester United.
With any luck. What pitfalls of the modern game do you think that are BS? Dave, you're going to say offside.
Yeah, the offside rule is BS right now.
Not the podcast, the actual rule. I'm going to say... clubs on Twitter. I'm also going to say I hate when clubs do their lineup as a video. It means that I have to watch the video. I just want it laid out in a JPEG. Do you know what I mean?
These are deep down issues here, Lawrence. It's like somebody's watching you across the road, isn't it?
It irks me. Sure, other modern pitfalls of the game, people saying that they know a lot about the game when they don't. Chris?
Honestly, nothing jumping out to me, I have to be honest.
Tactical analysis? Maybe we just oversimplify tactical analysis?
Yeah, a little bit of that. The cliche of modern punditry. There we go, Twitter. There it is. I found the answer.
Sure, Twitter,
It's just... It's such a...
Chris, are you okay? Do you need a hug?
I mean, I know you're not taking the piss out of me, but honestly, this week, if there's one thing I've come to realise with that, is that on the one hand, it can be a fantastic platform. On the other hand, it can be an absolute shit show of a place.
Good. Your favourite football boots?
Well, I just picked up a pair of Pure Controls.
Who's that by? Puma?
No, Adidas. I have been wearing and I've got them right here, the Nike Mercurials, the one with the sock attachment.
They are very nice, aren't they? Yeah.
They are, unfortunately, I don't know the technical terms here, the sole plate has come away from the actual shoe a little bit on the edge of the toe, if you will.
Wow, at Nike Football, wow.
Yeah, I was kind of disappointed with that because these cost 170, 180 quid and they've lasted less than a year.
wow, God, 170 quid on football boots.
Yeah, but I play a lot, to be fair.
Sure.
And the thing is, I've got quite weird feet in general, so the more comfortable I can get them, the better. But yeah, I'm quite disappointed because I obviously play a lot on artificial, and that's rubber crumb stuff. And that now gets in the crevice that's been created.
That rubber crumb stuff is annoying, isn't it? Yeah. It's bullshit.
So yeah, I'm not massively impressed with that, given the cost.
Oh, well.
I feel like they should be a bit more durable.
Talk to me, Dave. I'm going to go for the... I've got the Ace. Yeah. The sort of silver. They were mercury. Beautiful pair of boots. Great control. Thanks. Dave?
I'm not really into boots, to be honest, pal. What? I'm going to be honest. Yeah, like a standard pair of black boots will do me fine. Some good kickers to do some kicking and some goals. You know, try and replicate my hero Gary. That's, you know, I'm not too bothered what I get, Lawrence. Whatever comes on the feet. Of course, Gary Neville, hero, man, legend, Mr. Overlap.
They call me Mr. Overlap. you're looking for some more. Here we go. Question for Satman Dave: why is Alexandro never called up to the Brazilian national team? He's a beast. He's got he's a beast of a left back.
He is he's been very, very good this season. Been probably Juventus's best player, which is saying something considering the talent they've got in that squad. You know, if you look at the depth, they've got Marcelo there, who's probably number one. But I think Marcelo is a better fullback than Alexandro. Sandro one day will eclipse Marcelo, but at the moment, definitely Marcelo first. And then you've got someone like, you know, Felipe Luiz. They've done a lot of, you know, Brazil recently have gone domestic a bit, so they've been getting guys from within their own league. But I think Alexandro should get a call up in the next squad, 100%.
Dave, pictured City say to us, City could go to within 8 points of Chelsea if they win the next game. Is the title race really over?
No, it's never over. You know, Liverpool, what was it? How many points clear were they of United, Lawrence? What, 12? Is that the biggest one?
I don't know.
Something like that, anyway. Yeah, it's not over till it's over.
So you're saying it's not over?
Yes, I'm saying it's definitely not over yet. There's still 12 games to go. It's a lot of football.
It's a very good point, although someone should really tell David Moyes that. Anyway, it's been fantastic to have you guys today. If you've got any more questions, maybe Dave is going to go through some of those on his own football podcast, which is over on... Dave?
Dun, 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 dun. The Statman Dave Football Podcast, available on iCast, on iTunes.
No, on and of Acast course, and iTunes.
Dave. iCast. Sorry, Acast. I'm sorry, guys. Don't delete my podcast. That'd be terrible. I'll cry. Or on YouTube if you want to watch me talking about football with my lovely background. So, yeah, iTunes as well would be great if anyone wants to write a little review saying something like, Dave is sick at life. This is the best thing I've ever heard. That'll be fantastic.
Sure. And if anyone wants to put in those reviews that the podcasts are well edited and the audio is of great quality, just let us know. anyway.
Do it.
It's good. Chris, if people want to go find your stuff, what can they go read this week? Because obviously it's pretty key this weekend. A lot of good things returning.
Yeah, MLS is back. Officially, now seems a good time to confirm. I'm not doing MLS with Yahoo anymore. But I will probably be doing it other spaces. I mean, obviously, the front three is always a great vehicle to do that. This week, did something with Rashford's youth coach that should be quite interesting for people, even if you're not a Man United fan. And I say that because he talks about the development of a young player. And I personally found that quite interesting.
Excellent stuff. Let us know on Twitter at The Front Three, or you can find us on YouTube. You can also find the Statman Dave Football Podcast over on Acast, like Dave says, or iTunes. We are now off to meet Ian Wright. No way, Lawrence. Yes, Lawrence. We're on our way. So, Dave, I'll see you in, what, half an hour, and we can go see Ian?
Yeah, hopefully.
What do you mean, hopefully?
maybe a little bit longer than half an hour, Lawrence. I'm going to be honest with you, mate.
Okay, well, we've got to be there by 4:30, mate. So
get moving. See you there.
Yeah, yeah. All right, sweet. We'll see you guys again real soon, right here on TF3. Bye.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ.
the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.